Star Wars, Gridiron Galaxy. In a far-off galaxy beset by turmoil, the Galactic Republic teeters on the brink of collapse. Unbeknownst to the Republic, a clandestine organization known as the Separatists is plotting to secede, threatening to ignite the flames of war. Clark Hunt, the Republic's wise and pragmatic chancellor, enlists the service of his trusted ally, Jedi Knight Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes, known throughout the galaxy for his unique force abilities and unorthodox strategies, is tasked with uncovering the Separatist plans. Mahomes is not alone on this mission. He is joined by his trusted Padawan, Tyreek Hill, who despite his diminutive size is renowned for his lightning speed and agility. They're also accompanied by the strong and imposing Jedi Master Chris Jones, whose intimidating presence is only matched by his humor and kindness. As the group embarks on their mission, they discover a distress signal coming from a remote planet. Here they encounter Travis Kelce, a skilled bounty hunter with a reputation for being the best tight end in the galaxy. Though initially at odds, Kelce agrees to assist them in their mission after realizing the threat posed by the Separatists. Meanwhile, Jedi Council member Andy Reid, a seasoned veteran with a keen mind for strategy, senses a disturbance in the Force. Worried about the growing dark side, he dispatches Jedi Knight Tyron Matthew, known for his sharp instincts and exceptional defensive skills, to investigate the mysterious threat. Together, this band of unlikely heroes must confront the Separatist threat and prevent the galaxy from descending into chaos. As they navigate political intrigue, deadly battles, and tests of their abilities, they come to understand that the Force that truly binds the galaxy together is not just the mythical power of the Force, but unity, teamwork, and the relentless pursuit of peace. Go Chiefs.
Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter at RealBirdLawyer. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor_Witt. We got our friends ChatGPT cooking up a little Star Wars themed Chiefs content for you on May the 4th. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot. I'm really enjoying free content. ChatGPT is our slave to be able to just sit there and make whatever we want. And it's fun. I love it.
Yeah, for now, until it, you know, goes rogue and kills us. But for now, it is a lot of fun, and it's giving us good content. It's May the 4th. Did you celebrate in any way? Any Star Wars-themed content that you consumed today?
No. I was working and then prepping for the pod, so it was a Star Wars-less day for me. How about yourself?
I watched some little clips on Twitter. I think, Disney put together a little clip show thing. And, you know, here it was. It's just, clips from all the movies and shows. It was a little montage situation. It's about 2.5 minutes long. I did predict what the last line was going to be. So as I was watching it in my car on my way to work, I just spoke that out loud. You know, it was a little Force will be with you. And then I did the always thing, you know, Obi-Wan coming at the end. They just clipped him at the end. It was great. Original Obi-Wan, of course, you know, not the Ewan McGregor version, which is fine. You know, Ewan McGregor, he was a fine Obi-Wan.
He's a good actor.
He was good. Well, we got a great show for you guys today. But first, we have to plug our sole sponsor at the moment, our personal sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Promo code SUNNY, SUNNY, get you a match on your first deposit up to $100. You know the drill. Go out there, use our code, put your $100 in, get $100 for free. I keep plugging it before the draft, and the before the draft is fun to draft.
But Underdog now Fantasy, it really gets juicy.
It's best ball. You're doing drafts, you're drafting a team, and then you don't have to do anything else. So you just got to do the draft, and then you're done, and at the end, you collect your money. But yes, now is when it gets juicy, because now all these players have teams, but we haven't had minicamp, we haven't had rookie camp, we haven't had training camp, we don't know what's going to happen. So like last year, right after draft, we knew Isaiah Pacheco going in the 7th round. We, as Chiefs fans, knew that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was probably, you know, not going to hold on to that job very strongly, and this is a guy who ran a 4.3 and he's like 210 pounds and he's a absolute chunk out there, right? But like, Nobody knows that. Everybody knows that. So if you get on Underdog Fantasy and he's the last pick in your draft, boy, you got a screaming value in the 18th round or however many rounds there are on Underdog. I think it's about 18 for the standard draft. So we got a great show for you guys. We got news. We've got a new little off-season content because we are past the draft. We are firmly in off-season mode now. You've got a little thing in the fire that we're cooking up. I'm going to let you do a little intro on that. And then to close the show out, we're going to break down the draft. We obviously did our ill-fated, technologically fraught with difficulty live stream. And thanks to those of you who joined us for that. Kaka. But we will go back through and break down each of the Chiefs pick in the draft and kind of give you our opinions on that. You ready to talk about the news?
I'm ready.
Well, Taylor, I said it on Twitter the other day. There's almost nothing better. There's almost no better feeling than just refreshing Twitter. And I refreshed Twitter and it was the top tweet. It just appeared. It said 0 seconds. I saw it the second Tom Pelissero tweeted it into the air. Chiefs news. The week after the draft, and we weren't expecting anything to happen. The Chiefs have a new offensive tackle, Donovan Smith, signed for a one-year deal up to $9 million. Still don't have the exact details of how those incentives are breaking down, but it's a one-year contract. It's up to $9 million, and this is a confusing move. I don't feel like we have any more clarity now as we're recording this the day after it happened than we necessarily did yesterday, other than the Chiefs expect him to come in and compete for a starting job somewhere.
Yeah, everybody's kind of between Nate Taylor and Matt Verderama and whoever you listen to is pretty adamant that the Chiefs at least view this as a signing of a starter or a player with starter potential. So this is, you know, certainly going to shake up what we thought the plan for the offensive line room was. Now, it doesn't mean that the Chiefs always had that same plan, but we had been going into the offseason and the draft and everything just kind of slotting in the winner between Lucas Niang and, you know, maybe Wanya Morris, maybe Darian Kennard, just some kind of person over at right tackle, and then slotting
Prince
in
Tagovailoa.
Prince Tagovailoa, the prince who was promised. Maybe we'll put him over at right. But certainly we had all been told from the signing of Juwan Taylor that he was signed to play left tackle. And you certainly cannot have two starting left tackles. So, you know, maybe there's a plan to try Donovan Smith at right tackle, even though his entire NFL career since 2015 has been at left tackle. And even though Juwan Taylor's entire NFL career has been at right tackle, you know, you would think that if you're going to sign both players, you're going to play them where they've always played. Sure. So sure. It's just a really, I guess it's not confusing from the sense that, like, we know that they value protecting Patrick Mahomes. We know that they have PTSD about the Tampa Bay Super Bowl, which Donovan Smith was a starter in that game. We know that, you know, raising the floor of the offensive line by signing in a veteran player that's played for several years, you know, that's good. That's a good move. It's just confusing. That's what it is.
It is confusing, and it's confusing because we were told all offseason the Chiefs wanted a long-term answer at really at both tackle spots, but especially at left tackle. And, you know, obviously in the modern NFL, pass rushers are going to rotate around. They're going to come at whichever side is weakest. You know, it doesn't, left tackle is not that much more important than right tackle, maybe as it has been historically, but still, you know, the Chiefs paid Juwan Taylor a lot of money and they said he's going to switch to left tackle. And we think he could do that. And then they signed a guy who has never played at right tackle. He's never played a guard, and the Chiefs don't need a guard. He obviously is not going to play center. He's probably not a guy that's going to come in and be a swing tackle necessarily, because this is a guy who, you know, has been a multi-time Pro Bowler, who has been a really good player, who, you know, he's going to be 30. He turns 30, I think, in June, so next month. But a one-year deal for a guy like that, you have to think that he was given some assurances, at least that he could come in and compete for a starting job. And that's what the reporters have told us is maybe going to happen. What I think is confusing about it is obviously Donovan Smith is not a long-term answer at left tackle. So if the Chiefs have already decided that Juwan Taylor is not their long-term answer at left tackle, that would obviously be a big change.
Big from red what flag too.
What they told us 2 months ago when they signed him. And I agree, a big red flag, because I mean, how would you even know at this point if he can't do it? I'm sure they've had him in the building, that they've been doing spreps, but they haven't seen him in pads. He's posted some videos of him working out and everything like that. I mean, unless the guy is just like a total disaster, you wouldn't think that they'd pull the plug on that this early, unless they never intended to move him to left tackle. It's a tough situation. And obviously Lucas Niang and Wanya Morris are both guys that are better fits at right tackle. Wanya Morris, we'll talk about him in a little bit. He has played some left tackle. He played some left tackle in college, but really more, you know, just in terms of his footwork, his profile, his pedigree and his experience is far more geared towards right tackle. And so, It's odd, and I don't dislike it because
right.
we should talk about the kind of player that Donovan Smith is. Last year, he was not good. Okay, he was a bottom 20 tackle last year by PFF grade, and there's been some ugly footage, some ugly tape that circulated, here in the past 24 hours. People are breaking that down, but he was also playing hurt. He was playing mm-hmm. through an elbow injury. He was playing on an offensive line that was really banged up for the Buccaneers. Ali Marpet, their left guard, was out for most of the year, maybe the entire season. I don't know exactly, but I know he was out for most of the year.
Yeah.
And look
Brian
at who
Jensen at center. I mean, they
look
were,
at who he's protecting.
Yeah.
He's protecting a 45-year-old statue.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, 2 years ago, he was the second highest graded pass blocking tackle in the NFL per PFF two seasons ago. So in that sense, like,
mm-hmm.
seems like a no-brainer kind of move. Well, and, you know, put your best five out there.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I hate to say I like this, but look, if you're going to get beat as a tackle and someone's going to get after your quarterback or get a free shot on your quarterback, do you know what Donovan Smith does when he gets beat?
He holds.
He holds. I love that. I like, that's way better than Orlando Brown, who just lets him go blast him. Like,
sure.
You definitely want to, the worst case scenario you want on a pass rush rep is a hold. You do not want the worst case to be a mega sack, a strip sack of, you know, any of that stuff. You just want your guy to, if you get beat, grab him. You go back 10 yards. The Chiefs offense, when they go back 10
yards,
it's fine anyway.
Especially the Chiefs offense.
Especially
exactly.
The Chiefs offense.
Especially
so,
the Chiefs offense.
So look, I'm not saying that I want Donovan Smith to get beat all the time, but I am saying that I like the mentality of, like, if he's going to get beat, which he did last year during his health injury stuff, he held. That's fine. I'm okay with that. So in general, though, you know, without Donovan Smith, I think we were already pretty on board with the plan. I don't know if we know it was going to be a smashing success, but we certainly knew that Juwan Taylor at left and one of the three options that we already kind of were thinking about at right tackle, like, and then the best interior offensive line in football. That's a workable plan. That is certainly a workable plan. And now that you have Donovan Smith, all it does is give you another option for a potential better best five. And you know, the long-term plan, I get that you want Juwan Taylor to slot in right away at left tackle and be your long-term left tackle. But if it means more success in 2023 by maybe pushing back his development a year, but you get a better five out there and the Chiefs go win a Super Bowl, like, you know, you have to balance the current needs of the team to go win and win every game and win a Super Bowl with the long-term plan of getting the young guys and getting them in the spot that you need them long-term. And so, yeah, I think Donovan Smith does make the team more versatile, raises the floor. I also am kind of wondering where they scraped the $9 million from.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have to see how the incentives play out there. Because obviously if they're not likely to be earned, then that means they wouldn't next go year, against this year's cap. They'd go against next year's cap. But yeah, it's a good question. They still have some ways to raise some money. I like what you said there. And I wanted to follow up on that, raising the floor. That's what I was going to say too. I think this is a good move. I mean, listen, like, it's a good move if it raises the ceiling of your team. It's a good team if it raises the floor of your team. I feel like this potentially does both. It obviously depends on what version of Donovan Smith you get, but at the very least, I mean, the floor for his play is competent tackle play. I mean, even if, you know, he's not going to be as bad as he was last year, he's playing injured, unless he's injured and he's playing through an injury again. But, you know, again, you have enough tackle depth that you don't have to play him if he's hurt. So, you know, if he turns back the clock a couple of years, and, you know, I had some people tell me on Twitter that with offensive linemen, that doesn't necessarily happen. I don't know, man. I mean, like, I get it, but, like, it was an elbow injury. It's not like it's a back injury, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like what Mitch Schwartz was dealing with, or even what Eric Fisher was dealing with the Achilles, right? Like, those are hard injuries to come back from when you're a big guy on the wrong side of 30. But this is an elbow injury. You know, it's not like, it's not a lower back. It's not, you know, a soft tissue thing. It's just an elbow. And, you know, I'm not saying that Donovan Smith is, you know, Trent Williams, but Trent Williams is still playing at a really high level. He's, what, 33, 34 at this point. You know, I heard some people making the Willie Rofe comparison, and I don't want to invite that comparison. But, I mean, Willie Rofe played at a top
elite until his late 30s.
I mean, right, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we saw with the Rams. Who is their left tackle that just retired last season after they won the Super Bowl? I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Big guy, bald.
Yeah,
beard.
I'm you know embarrassed I can't think of him.
Yeah, sure. Whatever, that guy.
Andrew Whitworth.
Andrew Whitworth, thank you. Former Bengal legend.
Yes.
They're counting his ring over in Bengals land.
Sure they are.
For ring by
boy,
proxy.
Between Whitworth and OBJ, they're doing good over in Cincinnati.
I know. They're bringing in all kinds of rings into that building. Andrew Whitworth, I mean, he was 37 and he was playing at a super high level still. So, I mean, it's not inconceivable that he comes in and gives you good play this year, and it's not inconceivable that he comes in and wins, you know, a second contract with this team, and he's here for another couple of years. And if that works out, great. But I think, you know, the potential is there for him to come in. And if he plays like he did 2 years ago, it absolutely, your best five is going to include him somewhere, and probably at left tackle and probably Juwan Taylor at right tackle. And, you know, that offensive line has a higher ceiling than the offensive line the Chiefs just won the Super Bowl with, because Donovan Smith, if he's healthy and plays like he did two seasons ago, is a better player than Orlando Brown Jr., period. He is.
Yep.
And Juwan Taylor is a better player than Andrew Wiley. Andrew Wiley had a great year, but Juwan Taylor was one of the best pass-blocking right tackles in the NFL. So, you know, it's a good move. I like it. I'm confused, as you are, a little bit about where the money is coming from. We're going to find that out. But we got another signing to talk about. We've been calling this one for months. I mean,
yeah,
really, since like
has, yeah.
The day after the Super Bowl, right? We shouldn't pat ourselves on the back too hard because this was an obvious choice. But of course, after the draft is over, the compensation pick formula no longer applies. Not that Jerick McKinnon would have necessarily qualified for it, but spoiler alert, Jerick McKinnon returns. The Jet is back with the Chiefs.
Love that dude. Love everything that he brought culturally, attitude-wise. Love that he's a back that loves to pass protect, that considered himself part of the offensive line. Like, that's just such a badass mentality. Clearly led all NFL running backs in touchdown catches last year with 8. I mean, had those stretch late in the year that where he just went absolutely nuclear and was catching literally
NFL
touchdowns
for
every
consecutive weeks with receiving touchdown.
Yes. I believe it was 6, I think, is what he ended up with there.
Yeah.
And just was a mismatch, and, you know, obviously played some important downs for the Chiefs last year. And then, you know, when the season wraps up and he's not signed right away, even though we're all saying like, well, they better work out something with McKinnon, like they still hadn't done it. And that at least makes you wonder like, oh, are they, you know, is it going to work? Are they really talking to him? All that stuff. But as has come out since Jet signed back, you know, Andy said the day after the draft, we're going to bring you back. Jet said, I don't want to go anywhere else. I mean, they all kind of, it was a love fest. Everybody wanted it to work out. And boy, we are glad that it did.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You mentioned the receiving touchdowns. You mentioned the pass protection. I loved seeing when the Chiefs put out their little montage to welcome him back into the fold. You know, the play where he slid down at the 1 yard line in the Super
absolutely.
Bowl.
Absolutely iconic.
I mean, it is. It is. It's such an obvious play, obviously, because, you know, and the Chiefs had church mode on. They were going to take a knee, but I mean, I do feel like, even though it's an obvious play and it's a smart football play, like you absolutely have to do it in that situation. Man, I can't imagine being the guy to give up scoring a touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown, the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl to take a knee. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of player that you want on your team. That's a guy that's gonna sacrifice for you. So it's great to have Jet back in the fold. We've got some off-field news. The match, golf. The one time a year that I watch golf is coming up again next month. When is that?
I don't even know. Yeah, it's in the summer sometime for sure.
The match is going to be taking place. It's going to be Patrick Mahomes, who, of course, is a match veteran at this point, and Travis Kelce, who I don't know how bad he actually is at golf, but he certainly has talked down on his golf ability a number of times.
Yeah.
So it'll be Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce against the Splash Brothers.
Yeah,
Steph and Klay Thompson.
Yep, Steph Curry obviously is a big draw there, but Klay's an athlete. He's a lot of fun too. And you know what's fun about this, among all the things that are fun, is that the Chiefs often get compared to the Warriors with
style
of play and with, you know, the things that they've done to the game and how they are
and
just
Pat to Steph in
and absolutely Pat and Steph have been compared as far as just their crazy on-court antics and all the stuff that they do. And so, you know, I obviously know that Patrick Mahomes and Steph Curry are a good comparison, but it's fun when, you know, now we get to see them both on the same, and Steph can golf. He is, you know, I know Pat can golf. I don't know about Clay. And so I think the matchup is going to come down to if Clay's a better golfer than Travis, then the Warriors probably have an advantage there. But if he's not, then, I mean, I know Pat and Steph are going to go back and forth and have a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to it. I love anytime you can mic up Pat in like a non-interview setting. He always gives nuggets and is a lot of fun. And Travis, of course, everybody is excited about that. So going to be a blast.
Speaking of Travis, Travis and his big brother, Jason Kelce, on the New Heights podcast, have a special guest coming next week that we're all looking forward to. Andy Reid is going to be on the podcast.
Big Red.
Speaking of people that, you know, open up when they're not in sort of an official interview setting, I think this is has the potential
to
be
a
completely different side of Andy that we almost never get to see because he's so buttoned up in his pressers and in his official mode, and he's completely business, and you know, we got to get in and I've got to do this mandatory presser and you have four and a half minutes of my time, and then, you know, I'm out of here.
Time's yours.
he obviously drafted both Kelce brothers, and so, you know, it's just going to be really fun to, if nothing else, hear him reminisce about draft process for both of those guys, Travis and Jason both. And he's done that a little bit. I mean, he's spoken before about kind of the story of how the Chiefs thought they would, you know, draft Travis and pick him up in the third round, which was great. But it'll be fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
What I really like about this setup is that obviously Andy is, you know, this isn't like Andy going on any old podcast, like the Rich Eisen podcast. I mean, something like that. Like, he is comfortable with them, and they at the same time, they know that they can get a rise out of him and that they can kind of push him in ways that other people couldn't for fun. And for, you know, he's got that father relationship with them, with both of them. And I just think that if anyone can get a funny little bit of Andy Reid that no one else could have gotten, it's certainly going to be the Kelce brothers. Andy knows the podcast is a big deal to both of them, and he doesn't want to let him down, just from, you know, me projecting what I know about how Andy views these two guys who he absolutely adores. And he knows the podcast is a big deal to them. So, like, I think he's going to bring it. I think he's going to, you know, have some fun stuff. And I'm certainly looking forward to it. It should be a blast.
Should be a blast. Speaking of blasts, let's transition to some off-season content. Now, we've been hard at work cooking up some different things. We've got a lot of different stuff to bring to you guys over the next few months. We're not quite in peak off-season mode yet because we still have rookie minicamp coming up. We still have OTAs. But here in the next month or so, we're going to be deep into the off-season content. So we've thought ahead. We're planning ahead, and I'll let you introduce this idea, which is kind of your brainchild.
So this idea is going to be we're going to call it Blast from the Past or Blast Off or some type of the gang loves blasting.
There's going to be blasting. So sure.
There's definitely
going to be one big ass blast.
Essentially, you know, the number of weeks between now and opening kickoff for the 2023 NFL season is 18. And that's right around a full season worth of weeks. And so we wanted to go back in time and do a full season retrospective of a Chiefs year. We can start from kind of the intro to the year, and we can just work our way through what was going on in week one, week two, week three, and just take you guys back in time. And so, you know, obviously there aren't a ton of seasons that would qualify for being a blast. Not to say that the Chiefs haven't had a good, you know, good run in them, but a lot of them have ended in heartbreak, and a lot of them have been just kind of before Pat, just not a lot to write home about. But there is one season that I know is near and dear to my heart for sure. Really, really, even though I've been watching the Chiefs since I was six, like, got me as fired up about daily transactions and about just what's going on with the heartbeat of the team. And that was the 2003 Chiefs. So Austin and I, throughout the offseason, every week, we are going to we're going to dedicate a segment to talking about the 2003 Chiefs. Before I get into my intro for the team, what are your kind of first things that come to mind when we talk about the 2003 Chiefs? Just a couple ideas.
Well, we already shouted out Willie Rofe in this podcast. And that's kind of the first thing that jumps out to me is the offensive line and Priest Holmes doing his thing. And, you know, back in the Trent Green days, this is going to be a fun retrospective for me, because I kind of like, we were just talking about this on G-Chat today. You know, 2003 was really a magical time in Kansas City sports. We were both 16 years old. You're coming up on your birthday, so happy early birthday to you.
Thank you.
16-year-olds in high school, and, you know, the Royals and Chiefs both started out 9-0 this year. And this was probably the first year for me, because I really was not, this is going to shock you guys, those of you that follow me on Twitter and are familiar with some of my more esoteric interests that aren't sports. Not a big athlete growing up, not hugely interested in sports. And this was kind of the first. So the Royals, it really started for me in 2004 with opening day. They had a crazy comeback. Ugh. Mendy Lopez, the game tying home run, and then Beltran. Carlos Beltran walk off. They were down, I think, 4 runs entering the ninth inning.
7-2, I thought it was. Yeah,
that could be right. But they were. The reason that I was watching Royals baseball on opening day that year is because of 2003. And the same thing goes for the Chiefs. 2004 is actually the first season that I was really plugged in because of 2003, when the Chiefs, you know, obviously had that 9-0 start. I know about how the season ended.
Sure, we'll get there.
I know the Chiefs' final record, but I'm excited to kind of go back and watch some of these games because I was not following the sport like I do now.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. So for the segment today, we're not going to go into week one. I'm just going to kind of talk through the state of the union, the state of the franchise going into the 2003 season, what they had gone through the last couple of years, where everyone was at in their careers and their coaching careers. And I'm just going to take you all back down memory lane. So just sit back and relax. We're going to talk now about the 2003 Chiefs. So to start off, of course, the franchise, the previous year in 2002, they were 8-8, and that team was never more than a game above or below 500. They were always right around 500 the whole year. They hadn't had a winning season as a franchise since 1999, when they were 9-7. And they hadn't made the playoffs since 1997, when they were 13-3. So in 2003, you know, we're sitting there on like a 6-year playoff drought, certainly not the cream of the crop, not the talk of the town the way the Chiefs are now. The draft, the 2003, before the 2003 season and the 2003 draft, they went with a running back in round one. Of course, that was Larry Johnson at pick number 27. And then they went linebacker in round two, Kawika Mitchell at 47. So they certainly were not on board with the whole positional value.
Completely different world 20 years ago.
Exactly. Running back, linebacker. That's what wins football games in 2003.
You know who did that this year?
The Lions. Exactly right. They did say that they're planning on playing Gibbs at slot wide receiver. I know. We'll see. So other than those two players, everyone remembers Larry, and most people, if you've been watching the Chiefs for a while, remember Kawika Mitchell, but none of the other picks in that draft, cornerback Julian Battle, tackle Brett Williams, tackle Jordan Black, defensive end Jimmy Wilkerson, defensive tackle Monty Sharp, and cornerback Willie Pyle, really did much of anything in their NFL careers at that point. It was not a home run draft going in. It's not like the last year's Chiefs team that, you know, hit homer after homer in the draft, and those rookies ended up being a huge part. This was really, Larry Johnson barely played in his rookie year. This was all about the veterans, okay? So the veterans on this team, and there were plenty of them, we're going to start in the front office, because Carl Peterson, present general manager of the Chiefs, had been president since 1989. And so he was there throughout all the dominant defensive years in the 90s, everything that you remember about all the, you know, the Joe Montana and Marcus Allen Chiefs and all that stuff. Carl Peterson was there for all those, and he was still sticking around in 2003. So he had certainly been around the block. But Dick Vermeil, who began his coaching career in 1976, but then took a huge break between 82 and 97, latched back on with the St. Louis Rams in 97, won the Super Bowl with them in 99, took a year off in 2000, and then in 2001 came on over the Chiefs. And so there was something that happened between 2001 and 2002 that set the table for 2003 and made the expectations for 2003 pretty exciting given how 2002 went. And that was the development of the offense. So in 2001, they were ranked 16th in points and, you know, just not, they were middle of the pack. They were fine. They had Trent Green. They got him from the Rams, but they weren't lighting the world on fire. But that 2002 8-8 team was number one in points in the NFL points scored. So they, you know, fourth in yards and certainly ran the ball really well, rushing yards third, rushing touchdowns first. They really took a huge step forward as far as the efficiency of the offense in 2002. Now, the defense, stop me if you've heard this story before, ranked in 2002, 32nd in yards, 28th in points, 29th in rushing touchdowns allowed, 30th in yards per attempt on. So, I mean, they had a ways to go on defense, but they had the offense figured out. And so going into 2003, people figured at least if the offense can maintain, you know, be about what they were, but then that 32nd
time.
Yeah, exactly.
If we stay good at everything we're good at and we get better at all the things we're bad at, we're going to be a Super Bowl winner.
We certainly have heard that tale before. So that was the coaching of Dick Vermeil and then the general manager of Carl Peterson. And the Al Saunders was the offensive coordinator. And Al Saunders was a San Diego head coach for a little bit and then became in 88, he was a San Diego head coach and then kind of bounced around for a little bit and was an assistant head coach for the Chiefs for a while, went over to the Rams in 99 and linked up with Dick Vermeil there. And then when Dick Vermeil got the job in 2001 back with the Chiefs, Al Saunders came back over. He was the offensive coordinator. So along with Dick Vermeil, who is known as his offensive prowess, Al Saunders most certainly was a big contributing factor in what they were doing on offense and just the whole playbook. And I mean, really was a gifted offensive mind. That's the coaching staff. That's kind of who the leadership was in place. But of course, you don't have leadership unless you have a quarterback. And Trent Green, at the time in 2003, he was 33. He had come off of a horrific knee injury in 99, which paved the way for Kurt Warner's career. And then when things didn't happen for him in 2000 with the Rams, the Chiefs, of course, picked him up in 2001, and he became the franchise quarterback. And so after a couple of fine years, he was okay in 01 and 02. Clearly, if they were scoring a lot of points, it's not like he was bad at his job, but, you know, 17 touchdowns and 24 picks in 2001. Again, 2001 NFL, that's not as bad as it would be in 2023 NFL, but it certainly wasn't great. And then he took a huge step forward. Touchdowns went way up in 2002 to 26, and the picks went way down to 13. So he was a 2-1 touchdowns to picks. Things were rolling. Things were happening. The Chiefs had a quarterback, but going into 2003, of course, they would still need to fix some stuff on defense. The offense in 2003, of course, featured Priest Holmes, who was a Baltimore Ravens running back from 97 to 2000, undrafted free agent, very famously one of the most successful undrafted free agents of all time. And then in 2001, when the Chiefs picked him up, he broke out for 1,500 rushing yards and was a All-Pro, first team All-Pro running back, AP Offensive Player of the Year. He finished third. So certainly a big breakout year for Priest in 01. He was the heart of the team. I mean, absolutely the offense ran through him. 2002, he
increased. Do you remember his pizza commercial?
Yeah, of course. I remember Trent.
Hey, Holmes, the Papa John's pizza is here.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, love that.
I wasn't even super watching football then, but
it was all over.
Commercial. They played it on every in my mind.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. So then in 2002, he rushes for more yards, 1,600. He increases his rushing touchdown total from 8 in 01 to 21 in 2002 and was a fantasy football dynamo. He was the AP Offensive Player of the Year, was again second consecutive All-Pro running back, finished fourth in MVP voting in 2002. So 2002, despite the Chiefs being 8-8, the reason they were the number one offense was certainly Priest Holmes, and I'll get to the other guys that were involved in that as well. So going into 03, you know, the Chiefs are looking at like, okay, we can score points. We've got a badass running back. We've got a quarterback that took a huge stride forward last year. They felt pretty confident. I know I did about the offense's ability to go out there on the field. Another guy that really, really stepped up his game going into 2003 was Dante Hall. Dante Hall was a draft pick of the Chiefs in 2000, but really for the first
and
2 years.
Recent inductee.
Into the Chiefs Ring of Honor. Congratulations to the X Factor. He absolutely deserves it, if only for the two seasons in 02 and 03, which were as electric as any season any player has ever given us. But in 02, After his first two seasons of not really being involved that much on offense, really stepped forward and had almost 400 yards receiving in 02 with a couple touchdowns, and of course was a kick returner and had a touchdown, a kick return for a touchdown, and 1,300 yards returning on kicks. So he kind of showed himself to be the guy, you know, be a guy that he was an all-pro returner in 02 and was a weapon, was an absolute weapon. Everybody knew going into 03 that you kick the ball away from Dante Hall, he's one of the most dangerous return men in the NFL, if not the most dangerous. And so he was a weapon. They brought in Johnny Morton, the wide receiver, in 2002. They brought him in from Detroit, who spent his whole career from 94 to 01 in Detroit and was fine, was middling. I mean, never really, you know, broke out a ton. His career high in touchdowns was 8, and his career high in yards was just over 1,100. So, I mean, he was fine. But they brought him in 2002. He had about 400 yards and a touchdown and was a fine contributor on the offense. But the main wide receiver weapon on the offense was, of course, Eddie Kennison. Eddie Kennison started his career with St. Louis, but then bounced around a little bit, New Orleans, Chicago, Denver. And then in 01, Denver let him go and the Chiefs picked him up, and they only got him for the last 5 games of 01. But he came in 2002, had 900 yards receiving. I mean, was immediately the wide receiver one when 2002 started. And if they weren't running the ball with Priest Holmes, they were throwing it to Eddie Kennison or the next guy. Of course, legendary Tony Gonzalez. Tony, by this time in 2002, going into 2003, was already the league's best tight end far and away. He was a 26-year-old. He had been already to 4 Pro Bowls. He had been AP number one tight end 3 times and second AP second team the other year. So, I mean, there was no class of the NFL at tight end better than Tony Gonzalez. You all know that. Just racked up receptions and yards and touchdowns, was a unit, was an absolute animal. And he was the heartbeat of the passing game in the way that Priest Holmes was the heartbeat of the running game. But the protection game was the whole reason that this team ticked. And we mentioned him earlier, Willie Rofe at tackle, but joined by Brian Waters at guard, Casey Wigman at center, Will Shields at right guard, and John Tate at right tackle formed what you could argue was the greatest offensive line of all time. I know there are certainly some cases to be made for some other historic lines, but for my money, watching these guys block, watching these guys pass protect, watching these guys road grade for Priest Holmes game after game after game was a sight to behold. They were as dominant of a unit as any team I've seen in any, not just the Chiefs, but of any football team I've seen since 2003. I mean, those guys, the memories I have of them are phenomenal.
What about the defense? Are we going to talk about them at all? Or,
we are. We're going to introduce the defense because they do play a key role in the 2003 season. Now, it's not maybe a key role as far as shutting everybody down all the time, but they came up with their share of big plays and big reasons that Chiefs won the game. So we switch over to the defense. And of course, Greg Robinson was the defensive coordinator. After a year with the Jets DC job in 94, he became a Denver Broncos defensive coordinator from 95 to 2000. So he was Elway's, you know, end of his career. He was the DC there. And really, you know, they had a solid late 90s defense when they weren't cheating.
Great defense. Yeah.
Yes. Very good. And
carried Elway. We've talked about it on the show many times.
Exactly right. So, you know, Greg Robinson then comes to Kansas City in 2001 and doesn't necessarily have the horses, doesn't really, I mean, they're fine, but they're 23rd in 2001, and then things kind of fall off a cliff in 2002, and they're 32nd in yards and 28th in points. So they've got to, going in 03, everybody knows, if Greg Robinson can just get his shit figured out and just get some guys in there that can play defense, we'll have a shot. And they started their free agent spending by going out and picking up Philadelphia Eagles linebacker Sean Barber, who everyone knows now, does a bunch of, you know, Chiefs content, podcast content and all that stuff. He's great to listen to, really, really knows his stuff. And Sean Barber came in as like the big free agent acquisition on defense. And he was going to play, you know, kind of that left outside pass rusher, left linebacker, and was going to come in and anchor the defense. And he was a 28-year-old, so he was a little bit long in the tooth for a big-time free agent pickup. But, I mean, still was absolute big move for them. And then some of the other guys that I thought this was really interesting. When you look at the guys that had been career Chiefs in 2003, here's what we got. We got Scott Fujita, who was another linebacker who was drafted in 02. So he was going into his second year, obviously career Chief. You have Greg Wesley, who was the defensive back, played strong safety. And in 03, it was his fourth year, all with the Chiefs. They drafted him in 2000. You had Jerome Woods, who was drafted in 96, but now we're sitting there in 03, and he's a 30-year-old and had never played for another team. He missed all of 2002 with a broken leg, and so he's coming back in 2003 as a 30-year-old free safety, but had a great career up until that point, and there was no reason that Jerome Woods wasn't going to get the starting job. But again, full career time Chief. Eric Warfield, drafted in 1998 by the Chiefs, and so in 2003, he was a 27-year-old in his seventh year in the league, all with the Chiefs. So they really did, you know, they had a lot of guys. Mike Maslowski. Mike Maslowski was a linebacker. Always reminds me of Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc. But Mike Maslowski was a middle linebacker who in 2003 was a 29-year-old. He was drafted at 25 in 1999 by the Chiefs. So they just up and down the board. Eric Hicks, defensive end. I mean, I'm talking about starters. These are not just guys I'm pulling off of the roster. These are the starters at every position. Eric Hicks, drafted in 98. By the Chiefs, 27-year-old in 2003, still playing for the Chiefs. But there were a couple additions. Oh, I didn't mention Gary Stills. Gary Stills was a defensive end, drafted in 99 by the Chiefs, 29-year-old playing still for the Chiefs. And then Arkell Truluck, who was a 28-year-old rookie in 2002. And then
what?
Yes, I don't really understand what happened. Also, may he rest in peace. He died in 2019. But
R.I.P.
His first game action was as a 28-year-old in 2002. So
did he take the Kurt Warner path? Was he sacking groceries? Or
that's a good question. I'll have to look into when Arkell Truluck makes a big play later on in the retrospective. I'll have a little bit more on his background because I certainly remember him. Very unique play name, R-K-A-L, Arkell. Like that's awesome. But they had two free agent pickups that both had great years in 2003 and really, really helped bring the defensive along. And that was Dexter McLeon, who was a defensive back for the Rams. He was a 97 drafted by the Rams, played through 2002, and then wanted to come continue to play with Dick Vermeil. And so came over in 2003 as a 30-year-old cornerback, free agent cornerback. So they spent in free agency on a 30-year-old cornerback and drafted a running back and linebacker. So, you know, their times were different. Times were different in 2003. And then the other big free agent acquisition was Packer legend defensive end Vonnie Holiday, who spent his first 5 years with the Packers and, I mean, was a force. He was this runner-up in defensive rookie of the year, his rookie year, and comes in 2003 trying to lead the pass rush. So that is the introduction to the defensive players. Three free agent pickups in Sean Barber and Dexter McLeon and Vonnie Holiday, and then career Chiefs all across the board. Everywhere you look, everybody was drafted by the Chiefs. Everybody had grown up with the culture of the Chiefs' late 90s dominant defense still ringing true. And everybody, you know, when fans went to Chiefs games in the late 90s,
it was all about the defense.
You expected dominant defense.
Through the entirety of the 90s, really.
Yes, exactly right. And really, I mean, that was still lingering in, you know, they had clearly been lighting up the scoreboards in 2002. But like, I remember thinking of the Chiefs as a defensive unit going into 2003 still, even though I knew that on the field they weren't. It's just like the mentality of once you – it's almost like, you know, if you're like a Bears fan or something, like I don't really care if the 2024 sure. Bears have a shitty defense or not. Like they think of themselves as a defensive unit. That's just kind of the way that some fan bases view themselves.
And you know why that is?
Because they've had shitty quarterback play. They've
never had a 4,000-yard passer in the entire history of their franchise. And – we will talk about that really quickly. I don't want to interrupt, but Arkell Truluck, he played in the CFL. He was a UDFA. He did not make it with the Washington football team. What they were called back
the
then.
Bleeps.
And he signed with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and he played there until 2000. And then he played in the Arena League with the AFL's Detroit Fury.
Oh my God. So he did take the Kurt Warner path.
He literally did.
That's awesome. I loved Arkell Truluck. He was very, very interesting prospect and very interesting guy. And I was devastated when I found out that he died in 2019 because, yeah, cool stuff there. Cool story.
Is he on our death list, by the way? I feel like for him, that would be an honor. It is really sad. He passed away from complications from ALS and cancer. So like, I mean,
he is on really the Broncos death list. Yes. Okay, that was good for you to point out though, because yes, we have shouted out our culture look before. So,
okay, good.
Now that's the roster.
Stage is set.
What's that? The stage is absolutely set. It is. Just to kind of, you know, go over where the Chiefs were, you know, fan base wise and all that stuff with the way that the 2002 season ended at 500, despite a dominant offense and a horrible defense. I mean, I know personally, I was really looking forward to just kind of how the Chiefs were going to approach the defense in the offseason. I kind of was frustrated with some of these lifetime Chiefs personally, if I remember correctly, because despite liking them all and growing up, you know, when most of those guys were drafted, I was 10 years old or whatever. And then by the time this comes around and they're all 5-year veterans and they've been the defense my whole life. All those guys that I just named were the Chiefs defense. And despite them being very good in the 90s, it's the early 2000s and they were getting a little long in the tooth. So I was really interested to see just kind of, you know, the development there. I was very, very much I must point out that 2002 was the first year of division realignment and the NFL landscape completely shifted in 2002. This was the expansion with the final expansion team of the Houston Texans, of course, picking David Carr first overall in 2002. And
great pick.
Yeah. A monster pick. And you know, this was the Seattle Seahawks leaving the AFC West to go to the NFC West. And so we kind of lost that rivalry there. But I mean, of course, the hatred for the San Diego Chargers, the Oakland Raiders, and the Denver Broncos was alive and well. Yeah, it's fun to talk about several teams that just things have not gone well for them in a long time. So that's what we're going to talk about throughout this offseason. Next week, we're going to recap one game every week. And so we're going to start with the first game on the schedule in 2003, when things were all fresh and new and Drew Brees and the San Diego Chargers come to Arrowhead and face off against the Chiefs. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be great. We hope that you guys will enjoy going on this journey with us. It's going to be an interesting perspective. Obviously you having been very plugged in and growing up with that of me, watching a lot of these games for the first time. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Let's close the show out with the present day Kansas City Chiefs. Fast forward again to 20 years. Here we are, May the 4th, 2023. Let's talk about the draft. And we obviously did do a live draft show. If you guys did not get to catch it, you certainly can catch the recap. I haven't listened to it. How rough was it?
It was a little choppy with the connection and stuff, and the volume on my mic for some reason shot way down. But I love the content and it is listenable. It's just a little weird.
Bear with us. If you guys enjoy the show, I'm sure you'll enjoy the live show. It was a lot of fun to go through, you know, jumped in around pick 20 and I mean, really roasted some teams that deserved getting roasted. So, you know, that's why you guys listen to the show. We know that you're here for the you know, for the cut downs and the put downs and the takedowns. I've got a really good one coming for the Bengals, by the way, just a little teaser.
Pop
that on Twitter.
It's so good.
24 to 48 hours. So starting off with pick one, round one, pick 31, first pick for the Chiefs, pick one for the Chiefs. Felix Anaduke-Uzomah out of K-State, obviously FAU. KCSN, our friends at KCSN, had him as their number 8 edge. Dane Brugler over at The Athletic had him as the number 7 edge in this class. So this was a pick that, you know, obviously we've broken down on the live show and, you know, just exciting from the standpoint that it's a position of need. It's a guy that has a lot of bend, a lot of juice, very young, just turned 21 years old. And the cherry on top being, you know, a K-State kid and a Lee Summit grad, you know, grew up in Kansas City. It's been great, obviously, to see, you know, the reactions to it. The Chiefs put out a picture of him, you know, on the field at Arrowhead when he was, I think, 8 years old or something like that.
He was 10 and he's stretching his arms out, and it's incredible.
It's great. It's amazing. So you've had a couple of days, you know, a week now to digest the draft. And any additional thoughts on Felix?
Well, for those that have listened to the show, you know that I've wanted the Chiefs to draft Felix and UDK Uzomah. And I kind of not really predicted it, but he was one of the guys I was looking for in the first round. And really, as that pick was approaching, I mean, I was pretty fired up that it was going to be FAU. And even though I'm a KU guy, so this is not a K-State bias coming out in me or anything. It's just
right, which is important to note.
It's important to note. I look at him as a football player and not as a Wildcat. And I can't believe that anyone would be upset about it based on where he played meaningless college football, because in the NFL, college football is meaningless. And he's very exciting. I think exciting is a really good word for it, because you don't necessarily know exactly what he's going to be, but you can really see a potential for a dynamite football player. And he was highly productive at K-State. We mentioned on the live show turning pressures into sacks, which is something that not all edge rushers can do. Not all pass rushers can do. They can get there, but finishing the play is the only thing that matters at the end of the day, because if the quarterback escapes and makes a play, it doesn't matter that you've flushed him out. So I really like FAU's close abilities. I really like his just the bendiness, like you said. He's a guy that the Chiefs don't really have. And
right.
I mean, you know, he's kind of like the ideal version of Frank Clark, the Frank Clark that the Chiefs thought they were signing when they traded for him.
Sure. Before he lost all his speed.
And it was 5 years ago and all that stuff. But I mean, that's the player that, I mean, Felix said he models his game after Frank Clark. And of course, everyone takes under the assumption that that means 2018, 2019 Frank Clark and not necessarily the old guy. But I'm fired up about the pick. I really like it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what development, because he's already going to be a guy that Chiefs can utilize and he can play right away. But being as young as he is, and this has been a little bit of a trend with the Chiefs with their first round picks in particular, they're going for younger guys. I mean, they don't like to draft 25-year-olds or 28-year-olds like
sure, nobody does
20 years ago when Carl Peterson was the GM. Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if he can add any weight. He's obviously a leaner guy, a skinnier guy. You know, any of these Power 5 teams, you'd think that there's a limit to how much better shape these guys could get in, right? Going to a school where they have great facilities and great trainers, and those guys are getting paid a lot of money. And literally now the players are also getting paid some amount of money to be in game shape. But, you know, he's a guy that maybe could add a little bit of weight. He's a little bit on the lighter side, but I've heard the comp to KCSN, comped him to Melvin Ingram, who obviously has had, you know, a nice little stint with the Chiefs in there. I've heard some comps to Chiefs legend Tom Bahaly, which obviously would be extremely fun to get, you know, another Tomba in here. It's been a long time since the Chiefs have had a dominant edge rusher. I mean, really, you have to go back to
Tomba and Justin Houston. That was it.
Tomba and Justin Houston. That's the last time the Chiefs have had a dominant force on the edge.
Yep.
And it's exciting to get a guy that has that kind of potential, whether he fully realizes it or not. You know, it's exciting to get a guy that has that potential. You know, even last year, taking George Karloftis around that same kind of spot in the draft, like George Karloftis, you know, excited to see what he develops into. And, you know, he's a guy that may be able to recapture some of his bendier days as a lighter man, you know, in his early college career. But, you know, he just doesn't have the same upside as FAU does. And so it's exciting to see where he's going to go. So turning to the second round, the Chiefs trade up. And they did that a lot in this draft. Almost, I mean, I think five of the seven picks.
Yeah. Yep.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
The Chiefs trade up. They go up to Detroit's pick, which they had from the Minnesota Vikings. This is originally Minnesota's pick. Detroit got it for one of those trade backs to get, you know, a linebacker or running back or whatever it was they were doing in the first round. And they take wide receiver Rashee Rice out of SMU. This was, you know, we obviously talked about it on the live show, but starting at pick 20 in the first round, four wide receivers go in a row. You know, kind of the top four guys on our board and pretty much everybody's boards: Quentin Johnston, Jordan Addison, Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Zay Flowers, all off the board. Jonathan Mingo went towards the beginning of the second round, which is a guy that a lot of people really liked and comped, you know, kind of a similar player to AJ Brown a little bit.
Yeah.
So Rashee Rice, KCSN's wide receiver six, compared him to T. Higgins, and Dane Brugger's right wide receiver 11. So, you know, Dane wasn't quite as high on him as some other players. I know a lot of fans, this was a polarizing pick because I know there are a lot of fans out there that didn't have high opinions of Rashee Rice, but I don't know. I'm excited for this player, and I know you are too. What is it that you like about him?
Yeah, I really like the fact that the Chiefs brought in someone that they didn't already have. That's something where when you are a defending Super Bowl champion with veteran presence all over your roster on both sides of the ball and a lot of stuff that's really in place, and you trust your coaches to be able to coach up young players. Like, they not only do they have the veteran presence, but they also know that if they bring in a project, quote unquote, that they have the staff that's going to be able to turn that guy into something. And Rashee Rice is absolutely represents the X receiver that the Chiefs haven't had in a while. I mean, you could make an argument for Sammy Watkins when he was healthy that he would be that kind of X type of guy. I know that when we signed Juju, I thought maybe he would play a little bit more of an X role than what he ended up doing. But sure, what I like about Rashee, other than, you know, obviously he's 6 foot, almost 6 foot one, he's 205 pounds. He is a dynamo in the open field. When he gets the ball in his hands, both Brett Veach and Andy Reid and several others that have kind of talked him up since the Chiefs drafted him always mention that he's a running back once he catches the ball, and he runs through people, he runs over people. He's certainly a physical guy in the middle of the field, which is what you want out of a dude, you know, catching passes over the middle and doing kind of some of that dirty work, wide receiver stuff that the Chiefs haven't really had a ton of. So I love that. I love that he's a jump ball guy. He had the highest vertical of any wide receiver at the combine with 41 inch vertical. So, you know, he can get up. And when you have Patrick Mahomes, and when you have a passing offense with Travis Kelce and Andy Reid dialing up the plays and stuff, you want as many different skill sets as you can have. That's really how you unlock potential. That's really how you get plays that if you didn't have that skill set on the board, you just couldn't run. And now that you do, you can. So I like the potential to get around the goal line. And instead of everyone knowing the two or three plays that the Chiefs are going to run, because they've run the same two or three plays around the goal line for a while now, now you can throw a fade. And I don't normally ever like the fade, but it's because we've never really had a guy like Rashee Rice to catch the fade. And I've always said that, you know, when you throw a fade, you're basically just wasting a down. But then other NFL teams would catch the fade, and I'd be like, well, God damn it, why can't we do that? And
against us, right?
It's always against
Mike,
us,
Mike
sure.
Williams posting Mike up Williams. in the corner of the end zone.
Yeah, Mike Evans or any of the. I mean, you know, just they would always throw those balls up, and I'd be pissed. And now the Chiefs have a guy like that. It's fun.
You know, it is fun, and I think, I don't know, I think one of the things that's maybe a little bit polarizing about this pick is that his on-field tape this last year doesn't necessarily match up with what you see in his testing numbers, because his testing numbers are pretty outrageous. He had a relative athletic score of 9.49. So he's a 95th percentile athlete at wide receiver. That's compared to other wide receivers. And, you know, the breakdowns here, the speed score. So his 40, he ran a 4.51. So that's long speed. That's the 71st percentile for that. But his 20-yard split was a 2.54, which is 94th percentile. And his 10-yard split was 1.5 seconds, which is 9.75 percentile. So, I mean, we're talking about elite burst right off the line of scrimmage. And you mentioned the vertical, the composite explosion grade is elite, the vertical 98th percentile, the broad jump 92nd percentile. So, you know, you got a big hyper-athletic guy in terms of how he's tested. The Chiefs have kind of made that a theme the last couple of years, really since the first two drafts, have really gone out of their way to draft exceptional athletes. And for the most part, it's worked out extremely well. Obviously, you know, some players better than others, but it's going to be really interesting to see that kind of player. I wouldn't necessarily make this comparison one for one, but You know, a guy that he kind of reminds me of a little bit is a guy that we all kind of wanted last year and passed on because of character concerns, and that's George Pickens. You know, pretty similar build. Pickens didn't test, but you know, when you see these guys blocking in the run game, that jumps off the page. The way that these guys, even not as, I mean, they're not DK Metcalf, but they manhandle wide receivers in the run game, and they are willing blockers, willing to take people's heads off. And, you know, just the skills of the catch point. It's something that the Chiefs haven't had in a while. And, you know, one thing that we should mention is that Patrick Mahomes endorsed this pick. Yeah. He worked out with Rashee Rice pretty early on in the process. I mean, obviously, we all heard about Zay Flowers and Quentin Johnston working out with the Chiefs, you know, in the couple of weeks leading up to the draft. But Rashee Rice apparently had done some work with Patrick Mahomes, I don't know, a month or two ago, pretty early on in the process. And that wasn't really widely reported. So it's something that, you know, I jestingly referred to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which, you know, that after the Chiefs made that pick, they were like, oh, Pat told us to pick him. You know, like, we asked him who he wanted, and he said Clyde. And then we took Clyde and we got our guy. That obviously did go great, the Chiefs. I guess we should have put in the news that the Chiefs declined Clyde's fifth-year option. It goes without saying. But
barely news, yeah.
But this is a little – I want to say it's different because it's a wide receiver and it's a guy that he worked out with, you know.
Yep.
I do think that your quarterback's input is important when it comes to taking a pass catcher. Brett Veach and his presser said that they think he can do some of the things that – Juju Smith-Schuster did for them last year. He's a guy that can test a catch, run after the catch is something that really stood out. That's obviously what Brett felt like Juju was doing well. I mean, again, this is a bigger relative to the wide receivers that the Chiefs typically employ, wide receiver who can play over the middle. And, you know, whether he's going to have the deep, long speed to consistently win down the field on the outside, we'll see. But he can win over the middle, and he can run after the catch, and he can block, and he's going to be a monster in the red zone. It's an interesting pick. I'm excited about it.
Before we move on, let me just read the summary by Dane Brugler and then the How He Fits by KCSN. Well, these are just kind of the wrap-up stuff that they have. Dane says, a three-year starter at SMU, at SMU, Rice moved from the slot to the perimeter at as a senior in the power spread offense, and at a program that has produced a long list of quality receivers, he had the most prolific season in school history in 2022, breaking Emmanuel Sanders' receiving yards record and ranking number one in the FBS with 112.9 yards per game. With his ability to frame his catches, Rice times his leaps and wins jump balls, leading the FBS with 18 catches of 20-plus air yards down the field. Though he makes tough catches look easy, he is also guilty of dropping some easy ones and will freelance at will. Overall, Rice must prove he has NFL-level consistency in all areas to compensate for his average speed, but he is a ball winner with natural instincts at the catch. He can be a quality contributor early in his NFL career. And then KCSN, how he fits. Rice is an outside weapon that would bring in a different skill set to the Chiefs offense. KC does not have a player that can play bully ball like him on the outside. His ability to win in contested areas would be a welcome addition to the team, specifically in the red zone. Team fit high.
Yeah. So really quickly, some of those wide receivers out of SMU that you were mentioning, Courtland Sutton played for SMU, Emmanuel Sanders, who you mentioned, whose records he was breaking. So a couple of guys that have had recent success in the NFL, recent draft picks, James Proche, who still plays for the Ravens, Danny Gray, who was a third round pick for the Niners last year. We never really saw him again, but you know, RIP.
Sure.
But I mean, you know, Courtland Sutton, Manny Sanders for a program like SMU is a pretty good recent track record. I mean, both those guys were drafted in the last decade plus.
Yeah.
Manny was all the way back in 2010, you know, 13 Jeez. Years ago now. But
what's crazy is that 2010 was 13 years ago. That's what's crazy.
It is crazy. It feels like it was just yesterday. So moving to round three, the Chiefs move up again and they took an edge. They took a wide receiver. And then in the third round, pick number 92, they take an offensive tackle, Wanya Morris from Oklahoma, formerly a Tennessee Volunteer where he played with Trey Smith. Dane's offensive tackle 12 and KCSN's offensive tackle 8. So
third round,
a guy that has just crazy length and size. And that's obviously something that the Chiefs really do value. And, you know, this is where it gets a little bit interesting. We obviously already teased this conversation a little bit with Donovan Smith, but where does he play? Because he has played at left tackle in college. He's played more at right tackle, and that was the position that he most recently played at and, you know, really has his best tape playing as. But he certainly has the size to play left tackle. It's not that he's
6'4", 317.
And with, I think, 35-inch arms or something crazy
like
that.
Yeah, 35, correct.
It's not that he doesn't have the size to play left tackle. So, no. You know, there's been some rumors floating around. Some people have speculated that the plan could be to leave Juwan Taylor at right tackle and redshirt Wanya Morris behind Donovan Smith and have Wanya trained to play left tackle. And maybe he's going to be your left tackle in the future. I don't know if I buy it, but this is a guy that has the size to play over there. He's versatile, you know, like, and you got to love, I don't know. I'm a sucker for this stuff. It doesn't really matter, but you got to love that he played with Trey Smith, because
I think that matters.
If there's a guy that has an offensive lineman's mentality,
yeah,
that you want the kind of mentality that you want in an offensive lineman, which is I'm gonna murder you every single time we snap the ball, I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah,
I mean, Trey Smith is that way, and if Wanya Morris is that way, sign me up.
Well, not only did they play on the same line, but they were left tackle and left guard at Tennessee. So they were right next to each other. And then now, obviously, with Trey Smith being a right guard, and, you know, depends on where Morris slots in. But if he slots in as a right tackle, then they're right next to each other in the trenches. Again, they know each other's kind of tendencies and all that stuff. So it's also really nice to just have that mentor in the locker room that Wanya immediately knows he can go to and ask any question under the sun
and
be comfortable with. And he played with Creed at Oklahoma. So both of those guys, I mean, the two best young interior offensive linemen that the Chiefs have had in forever and that probably in the NFL right now, they both think of Wanya Morris as their little brother, basically. And I mean, that's a culturally, that's just such a good way to get a guy to buy in. That's such a good way to keep him, you know, motivated and to keep him honest and just everything that a young guy struggles with making that leap to the NFL. I mentioned when I wanted the Chiefs to draft Wanya Morris a couple weeks before the draft, I'll shout that out because I was pretty proud that they actually grabbed him.
Sure.
I liked
You're
that
draft
he played.
Expert now.
I mean, I hit two of them. I definitely was fired up about Felix and about Wanya. I liked that Morris played in both the SEC and the Big 12. He played obviously for Tennessee and Oklahoma. So he's played some big boy ball. That's, you don't mess around in those leagues. You definitely get NFL caliber defensive ends coming at you every week. So that's something that I'm really excited about his ceiling. I think that if you look at, you know, what the Chiefs could have done to hit a home run at tackle in this draft from drafting from where they were at pick 31 and, you know, considering the team makeup and all that stuff, you have to take big swings like Wanya Morris. You have to take a swing at a guy that if he works, if he hits, he's a superstar. And I mean, that's really what you're looking at here. So I'm fired up about it. I think that the versatility also means that between the three tackles they have, two of them are extremely versatile. You know, you've got Juwan Taylor who played it right and they think he can play left, supposedly. And that's, you know, that's versatility there. Morris played both left and right. And now you've got guys that you can kind of put your best guys out there. And if it happens, if one of those three guys of those three tackles is sitting, you know, you're hoping it's because the other two outplayed him and they're having good years. Like that's kind of how you want this to shake out. So I love the tackle depth now. I didn't think I'd like it going into the draft or coming out of the draft. I mean, I didn't think that I would be looking at the tackles, but of course, bringing in Smith now, it all just kind of is starting to gel.
Yeah, it is. And it's going to be exciting to see. And again, you know, Chiefs just checking off the list of needs. It's great that it's great that Brett went into a draft and, you know, with his first three picks took the three positions that the Chiefs most desperately needed to add at. So that brings us to the fourth round. The Chiefs, I think, stood pat for this one. Did they trade up? Or they did trade up for Jamari Connor.
Yeah.
Their fourth round pick at pick 119, cornerback out of Virginia Tech, or is he a safety? KCSN, had him graded as a safety, cornerback 12, or excuse me, as a cornerback, cornerback 12. Dane Brugler had him as a safety, safety 13. So this
Why? He split time. He did everything. He played in the slot. He played safety. He played up in the box. I mean, he was strong, weak, and slot corner. So he was everywhere.
You know who, and I'm not making a direct one-to-one comparison here, but fourth-round pick. Fourth-round pick 2 years ago, a couple years ago, 3 years ago now, I guess it's been, L'Jarius Sneed.
Yeah, and future NFL Hall of Famer L'Jarius Sneed.
If you look at their relative athletic scores and their testing, they're actually pretty similar. So Chamari Connor, another guy who's an elite athlete, 91st percentile as a free safety at athlete. L'Jarius Sneed also tested as a free safety, or at least that's how he's listed in the relative athletic score. We don't have their size in terms of their percentile for Chamari Connor. That's not listed. But in terms of their explosion numbers, you know, the vertical jump and broad jump for both guys, Sneed had a 41-inch vertical, Chamari Connor 40.5. So really similar there. Broad, L'Jarius Sneed was at a 10.11. Chamari Connor was at a 10.05. So again, you know, almost identical there. Their 40 times, L'Jarius Sneed did blaze away in the 40. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed ran a 4.3740, which is crazy. Chamari Connor ran a 4.5, but you know, he's a little bit bigger. And you know, their splits are actually pretty similar. L'Jarius Sneed was a 2.55, and Chamari Connor was right behind him, 2.6. And the 10-yard split, L'Jarius Sneed, a faster long speed, 1.51. Chamari Connor was right behind him, 1.56. So you know, again, this is a pick where this is probably the first pick of the three that seemed like, if you're just following along on the draft tracker or on, you know, the consensus big board on PFF or wherever.
Who the fuck is this guy?
Sure. Felt like a little bit of a reach. Sure. Yeah. That was the text that I sent you.
Yeah.
But I think when you think about it, it makes sense. And this is also a guy that can play special teams. You know, he has played a lot of special team snaps. The Chiefs hold it together at the end, you know, in the three games that mattered at the end of the year where it was win or go home. They pulled it together and they had great special teams performances.
Game winning special teams. Yeah.
For 17 games in the regular season, they were absolutely awful. So, you know, it's nice to get a guy that can play special teams, but if there's one position or area of the field where Brett Veach has earned our absolute unconditional trust, it's like day three defensive backs.
Yeah, it's cornerbacks. Yeah, absolutely. He's versatile, which I love. Again, you can see if you're drafting versatile athletes and you have good coaches on your end, that's a marriage. I mean, that works. You know, that's a guy where they come in with the things you can't teach them, which are the physical skills, and you give them the things you can teach them, techniques and playbooks and coverage and all that stuff. And Connor's definitely a guy that, even though he probably didn't have as big of a draft profile, the Chiefs clearly had their eyes on him and liked him and knew, you know, knew that he was a guy that they could see working in this defense and also on the special teams. I mean, you said it. I think they drafted him mostly for special teams, which, I mean, say what you want about using a fourth rounder on a special teams player. If he's a dynamite athlete and if he's, you know, making good coverages and doing all the stuff he's supposed to do, then you can see how that can win games at the NFL level. So,
and it's a way for him to get on the field right away, right?
The Chiefs have, they need it.
You're right. Exactly. I mean, like, he's at the very least, you know, he's going to be depth in the DB room. The Chiefs are pretty well set there, but you know, it's depth, and it's also, that's a way for him to get on the field and contribute as a rookie. And, you know, that's important.
I mean, there's a chance that if you talked about the needs of the Chiefs after the first three picks, if you looked at the roster and you said, okay, what else do the Chiefs really, really need? Like, you might've gone to special teams there for
sure.
They lost all those snaps that we talked about last year that was really impactful on the team. And you just need a way to build back up that unit and make it so they're not an absolute embarrassment, which, despite the playoff devil magic that was the run this year, like, they were bad on special teams last year. They were bad at returning. They were bad at coverage. They couldn't really do much right. And you got to bring in talent there. So I did like that pick a lot.
Yeah. So let's go to the fifth round, pick number 166. Chiefs take BJ Thompson, an edge out of Stephen F. Austin. KCSN's Edge 32, Dame Brugler's Edge 34. Boy, this was a... It was a wild pick. I mean, not a bad one, to be clear, but just one that I did not really see coming, just because his profile is absurd. I mean, his relative athletic score is bananas, and it's bananas in a bunch of different ways. Bench. Like, I got to get the bench here. I got to pull it up for you here really
it's
quick.
So good. Because it's 0.15.
It's 0.15 in the bench, which is... I mean, he did what, like...
he basically did one rep and was like, yeah, nah. Yeah,
right, exactly. like three or four reps or whatever it was for somebody his size. Now, long-armed defensive ends, you know, it's harder to, I'm told. Now, I'm not a, you know, I'm not an expert at bench pressing. But here's me shocked by this, I know.
Right.
Not an expert at the bench press, but I'm told that, you know, for guys that have long arms, it's hard to put up a lot of reps on the bench press. But you know
you're
what? Long arms.
You're pushing the weight up.
Yeah,
farther,
sure. You got to push it further away from your body. Exactly. Yeah. But you know what it is really good for is getting around the edge and flipping by people. And he certainly can do that. It's just, you know, this is almost a more extreme version of FAU in the sense that, you know, the Chiefs haven't really drafted players like this under Steve Spagnuolo. And, you know, you saw it a little bit in the first round with FAU, you know, a guy that maybe has a little bit less size than you would typically associate. And I mean mass in terms of a Steve Spagnuolo defensive
body bet, mass alone.
In terms of body mass alone, maybe not exactly what Steve would be looking for, but more bend, more explosion, more speed. And then this is like just a much more extreme version of that, right? Like he's just a skinny, fast guy who can rush the passer and get sacks.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a really interesting prospect, certainly. 6'5" and a half, 243. Like that's just such a, he's long and skinny, you know? And I mean, that's fine. And it could work out well. I'll read the summary from Dane real quick. A three-year starter at Stephen F. Austin, Thompson was an edge rusher and defensive coordinator Joe Coffin's four-man front. After showing promising flashes at Baylor, he was a very active rusher in the FCS, 27 and a half tackles for loss and 31 starts, and he had a productive showing during the East-West Shrine Bowl practices. A nuanced and the lack of power, a speed-based rusher, Thompson races blockers to the spot and shows exceptional muscle twitch and closing bursts to the quarterback. His rush is more crazed than nuanced, and the lack of power in his base and body is a red flag, especially when attempting to set the edge. Overall, Thompson is currently a liability as a run defender, but his speed and length make him a tough guy to keep blocked when he stays under control mid-rush. He is a developmental sub-package rusher, reminiscent of Arden Key, but will require time on the practice squad before he is ready for live NFL reps.
Arden Key is a good player. It took him a couple of years, but you know he's developed into a pretty useful player. And you know this whole idea of a designated pass rusher is not something that the Chiefs have necessarily embraced, but a lot of teams are doing it. And I mean, look at what the Eagles did with Hassan Reddick. And you know, I mean, Hassan Reddick is pretty undersized for the position that he plays with the Eagles, which is outside linebacker. But as a designated pass rusher last year, he had 16 sacks in 17 games. Now, he didn't do anything against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. Bummer for
Nobody
Philly. Bummer for Philly. Zero sacks. Put it on a t-shirt.
Yep.
But I'm excited to see what the Chiefs can do with this kind of player. Because, listen, I mean, we've seen Spags get creative, you know, blitzing with DBs. He loves to blitz with DBs. He loves to blitz with, you know, his undersized linebackers. Give him an actual pass rusher to bring in an obvious passing down and see what he can do with BJ Thompson off the edge. I'm excited to see it.
Can I make a admission here? For the last, like, minute and a half, I've been furious. And you know why?
Why?
Because you said Arden Key's a good player. And fuck Arden Key. I'm still not over the playoff game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he hurt Pat.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
You know, like I just couldn't think. I couldn't get it out of my head. It was like, you said
that's
a nice
fair
thing about Arden Key, and we moved on. And I was listening to what you were saying about Hassan Reddick.
Sure,
and I was ready to jump back in and just say, fuck Arden Key. So,
yeah, no, I get
fuck
it. No, I appreciate you having the restraint to wait until I was done talking. He's also a former Raider. So, I mean, like,
yeah, fuck Arden
Key. I mean, like, there's a lot of fuck Arden Key out there. But, you know, just in terms of his on-field production, I don't say anything about him as a person. I still maintain that it was a dirty play.
I'll take
it to my grave. I mean,
it was dirty as hell.
Let's just be honest. There are people out here that will tell you that it was not, but it was. Round six. This was Detroit's pick. Pick 194, Keandre Coburn, defensive tackle from Texas, my law school alma mater, Hook'em Horns. KCSN's defensive tackle 15, Dane Brugler's defensive tackle 17. Listen, I'm not going to tell you his RAS because he's a defensive tackle. And they actually, one of our listeners, I can't remember who it was, pointed out to me that RAS with interior guys, it depends on whether you're a three tech, the three techs and the nose tackles kind of all get lumped into the same category for RAS. You don't
want to compare them.
So, like, if you're a nose tackle getting compared to a three tech, like,
different skill set.
You're a different kind of athlete if you're playing nose tackle, and that's essentially what he is. But I like this pick. The Chiefs really have not had. I mean, Nadi's kind of played that role, but a true
space eating
mm-hmm. nose tackle in the center of the defense that can come in on rundowns and just eat space. And
do you know that he is also nicknamed Snacks?
Yes, I was about to say that is an appropriate role for a guy whose nickname is Snacks. I mean, he's there to eat space.
The first Snacks that was going to be the type of player he was. Didn't turn out to be the case, but you know, that's what happens when you're gigantic and old, is you're not as good at the NFL as you once were. But this guy is gigantic and young, which means that his best days are certainly in front of him. 6'1.5", 332 pounds.
Dense, thick.
He's a big boy. And you know, that boy dense. If he can make it at Texas, you know that they had grueling offseason stuff. And I mean, you know, that's a big boy program, certainly. And he was fine. It's an encouraging pick. It's one of those home run swing picks where it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to hit on all these guys unless you're the 2022 Kansas City Chiefs, but you certainly want to pick guys that at this stage in the draft, when you're now late in the draft, you just want a trait. You just want a trait that translates, that can be elite, and you can figure everything else out. And there weren't too many 332-pound players left in the draft at this point, and I will take my chances with Keandre Coburn. Real quick, Dane Brugler's summary. 4-year starter at Texas, Coburn was an interchangeable defensive tackle and defensive coordinator, Pete Kwiatkowski's 4-3 base scheme. While his college stat sheet is underwhelming, his on-field play showed a much more productive player, especially on his 2022 tape. With his low leverage position, Coburn creates power at contact to walk blockers backwards or reestablish the line of scrimmage. His pass rush instincts and heavy hands are inconsistent, but when he uses them properly, they batter and bully blockers to collapse the pocket. Coburn's NFL ceiling is lowered by his lack of length and explosive traits, but he is strong, stout, and athletic to hold the point and create pressure. He projects as a sought-off early down nose tackle in the NFL.
Sure. Sounds like a fun player. We'll move to the Chiefs' final pick. Pick number 250, Nick Jones, NIC. Nick Jones from Ball State, cornerback. Dane Brugler's cornerback 26, KCSN's quarterback 36. I mean, you know, again, I feel like I did not know anything about Nick Jones when we made this pick, but what I do know about Brett Veach is that he's batting like 800 on day three defensive backs.
Yeah, right. I mean, the guy can't miss. They're making the roster.
No, I know. Like, I mean, they're good players. I mean, yeah. Jalen Watson was an absolute animal, and he took him in the seventh round last year. Nazi Johnson, you know, contributed, and he was a seventh rounder. I don't know that much about Nick Jones, but I am willing to trust Brett Veach's opinion on a seventh round DB because, again, like, I mean, Jalen Watson is already, we talked about this last year in week two when he had the pick six against the Chargers. That's already a hit for a seventh round pick, right? Yep. And then he went on to have, you know, a really meaningful rookie campaign and, you know, contributed heavily to a Super Bowl winning roster. I mean, if you let Brett cook in the seventh round with DBs, I mean, he's not going to hit 1,000, but the man is seriously batting like 800.
Yeah. Yep. Nick Jones, you said he didn't know anything about him. Now you know one thing. He is one of eight children, six boys and two girls. So, big old family. His mom's a third grade teacher. This is all via the Dane Brugler write-up. But like, I love the background of him growing up in like a crazy household with five brothers and a third grade teacher as a mom. Like, just very, seems like an awesome guy to root for. And I'm sure he got into his fair share of scraps with all of his brothers. And now he is a cornerback on the defending Super Bowl champs. That's a pretty good situation for old Nicholas Nick Jones.
Yeah, it is a good situation. He's a little bit of an outlier on the RAS end. Obviously, we sort of left Snacks Coburn out of it, since it's not really fair to compare him to.
No, it's not.
You know, it's not. He was a round of five, by the way. Nick Jones had a 6.32 relative athletic score. Not amazing. His bench was not very good at all. 20th percentile bench. So he and BJ Thompson can hit the weight room together.
Right.
You know, that's fun. I think they probably did the same amount of reps, and it just is for a cornerback at an edge rusher. It's a little bit of a different situation, but his vertical 48th percentile there. So also, you know, not incredible size there, but he does have one elite trait. It's that 20-yard split. That is a good number for a cornerback, and he scored 85th percentile there. So that's nice to see. It's Brett Veach. It's a seventh round defensive back. I'm willing to trust him. We'll close it out. We'll, of course, give Dane summary here. 2-year starter at Ball State, played inside and outside cornerback in defensive coordinator Tyler Stockton's balanced scheme. Missing the second half of 2021 because of injury, he had his best season as a senior. Finished as one of only three MAC players to reach 14 passes defense in 2022, which, of course, is a stat that kind of cuts both ways because. Yeah. You know, you have to be thrown at in order to defend some passes. But he showed better play speed than time speed, which is good because his testing numbers were not, you know, exceptional. Stays balanced in his transitions to find the football. Still young in areas. Didn't become a full-time starter in high school until his senior year. Needs to get stronger and less handsy for NFL competitions. Overall, he needs to continue to add bulk, develop his awareness, but he plays quick, long, and controlled with a natural feel for crowding receivers early and late. He projects as a draft and develop press corner. Well, listen, you know, same kind of situation with Jamari Connor. The Chiefs have space to draft and develop Nick Jones. Now,
they do.
You know, this is maybe one of the only guys on this list that I wouldn't expect to be a lock necessarily to make the roster. I think everybody else here is going to make the roster again. I think Nick Jones will probably make the roster. You know, the Chiefs have a little bit of space, but that's the class. That's it.
Seven picks. They went into the draft with 10, wasn't it? I think it was.
And yes, 10 or 11. Yep.
They used three. I
think, yeah, they were done at 10. Yep.
Right. And then they used three of those to package deals to move up. They moved around. They got guys they wanted. One of the lasting quotes for me was when Brett Veach ended up calling Rashee Rice after he picked him. And Veach said, what's the plan today? And I told him, we're going to draft an SMU running back. And they said that at the start of the day. I mean, sorry, an SMU wide receiver. And then, of course, they do draft an SMU wide receiver. So I loved that they seem to have, you know, targeted their guys and found guys with niche fits. The other thing about being in a unique situation in the NFL is that you're not really jockeying for position with other teams, with a ton of other teams. You know, like, if you're a top 10 pick in the draft this year, unless you are like the Eagles and jumped up in there or whatever, but if you're one of those teams up there, you're all looking for the same stuff. You're all looking for, you know, elite talent at the elite positions. But I mean, for the Chiefs, they clearly had a plan, and that plan was not a desperation plan. It was not that they needed to get A pluses on everyone's draft grades, that they needed to take the value picks at every position based on what every team in the NFL needs. They took the guys that their team needs. And, you know, I just think that we are so spoiled by everything that the Chiefs do well, whether that's coaching or the play on the field or, you know, all the other stuff, that we're starting to realize that, like, Brett Veach might be as good at his job as all those other guys are at their job too. It's awesome.
It is awesome. Real quick, you want to give a grade?
Yeah, it's hard. Draft grades are so tough because we still haven't seen them in the NFL.
But why not?
I will throw in, before we do the grade, undrafted free agent Denerick Prince out of
Yes, of course.
And played at A&M before that. He is a 5'11", 216-pound back that ran a 4.4140, and he was there undrafted. And the Chiefs are fired up about him. Veach is fired up about him. Feels like a really good fit and a guy that you could easily see making this roster, especially, you know, with them not picking up Clyde's option. I mean, who knows if Clyde even makes the roster this year. I just don't really know what that's like, but I'm really excited about Denerick Prince too. I hope he makes it.
Yeah, I hope he does too. And obviously, the Chiefs just hit on a seventh round running back last year. So, you know, UDFA is certainly, I mean, we mentioned the great Priest Holmes, undrafted running back. I mean, it is Justin a position Ross. Where, that's right. Sure. I was thinking running back specifically, but yes, Justin Ross.
You said undrafted and I was like,
He's going to flash. I'm sure he's a future Hall of Famer, Justin Ross, but that's that's it for the Chiefs draft. I'm going to give this a solid B. You're hitting the singles. You're punching it over to the side of the infield where they don't have the shift on. Like whatever you're doing, you're laying
they
down.
Don't
a
do
bunch.
Shifts anymore, buddy.
I know. But listen,
get with the times.
when they used to do shifts before Manfred banned
we're
the
old
shift.
Heads.
You know, laying down a bunt, a perfectly executed bunt when the defense is shifted. Sure, that's what it is. It's just
doing your job.
It's a workmanlike draft. I give it a B.
Yep, I think B is a solid grade. Agreed.
It's always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. We'll see you guys next time.